Hello everyone and welcome to the season 1 finale. Shit's about to get real, but more on that later. I hope we've all had a great week out there. Mine has been an absolute nightmare, but hey, not too bad. It could always be worse, and touch wood, I'm not dead. Like, yeah, with Corona at the moment, and especially, like, my hometown has just had this new, like, South African variant, and it's, like, the first place in the UK to get it, and there's, like, police everywhere. It's fucking crazy. Yeah, like, what was it, last week, or when this episode comes out, like, 2 weeks ago, maybe? I don't even know. We must have gone somewhat, like, viral, which is absolute nuts. Like, the streams literally topped our old previous high by, like, well over double. And, like, I try not to get too focused on the stats, but, like, every week when I go to upload, in, like, in big fucking bold letters, it's, like, my streams, like, just screaming at me. So I was like, what the shit? Like, I had to have a double glance because I legit, like, couldn't believe it. I thought at least some of you would have got fed up with me by now, but hey, you've proved me wrong and you're amazing. I also got this email from some company that does show reviews and stuff like that, and we're your most popular, etc., basically trying to make me pay for some subscription or something that I really don't need, as my, like, distributor literally does all of that. But I found out we're in the top 20 podcasts in all of Hungary, so I thought, hey, that's a pretty badass fact. So I was gonna look up some folklore in Hungary, but I didn't. Well, I looked at some, and I'm gonna pronounce this terribly. I looked at this on my lunch break at work. I think it was called, like, Svend. I can't even remember. But basically, it's like this witch island where, yeah, so hopefully anyone listening from Hungary, I'm not destroying this and, like, your folklore, because I don't know enough about it. But in the 1700s or something like that, they were having this, like, serious drought. And then, of course, all of a sudden, loads of rain came out of nowhere and they killed all the women because witchcraft and all that. So, yeah, Hungary, I hope you've changed your ways. But yeah, thank you so much. I was well happy with that. Like, the show is growing, and thank you all. Like, I'm not sure if it's because some of you are actually leaving reviews on Apple Podcasts now, but so thank you all so much. And let me just check actually if we've got any more, because I haven't checked a week. Like, I try not to. Where are we? Apple Podcasts. Oh, we've got one more review actually. All right, let's have a look. Oh God, I hope. Oh no, it might start playing. I really do hope it doesn't start playing. Oh, now some weird funky sounds are happening. Alright, so we've got... Okay. So, we've got 5 reviews, but I can't see any more reviews. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, I've only got 4. But apparently there's 5 on my website. 5 ratings, 5 stars. Website? Nothing. Also, our related episodes are fucking weird, man. Because, like, I'm listed in, like, society and culture. Like, there's no paranormal category or, like, subcategory. That was the most relevant one. So, it's not the best. And if you find any related shows, they're probably not. Like, let me look at the related ones right now. Grounded with Louis Theroux. The Happiness Lab, and The Girls in the Bathroom. So I'm doing free advertising for you guys out there, but they do not look like something you'd probably want to listen to. Especially if you're listening to me, like, what the fuck. So yeah, I was going to read out your review. If you have done one, thank you very much. And also, last week, I don't know who you were, because they're just usernames on Apple. I still haven't heard from you, so yeah, let me know. It'd be good to thank you in person. Like, I know most of my streams are from Apple Podcasts, so... like, thank you guys so much. Maybe leaving a review bumps me up. I'm not quite sure. Like, I kind of have a vague idea of how it all works. But then again, I could be vastly wrong, which is pretty much like me. But thank you, of course, to all my patrons. That is... oh, fuck. I really should know this. I really should come prepared, right? So, thank you to all the patrons. That is Fee, Michael, Andrea, and Mauro. And, of course, people from Buy Me a Coffee, which is Cindy and After the Ever. So, thank you guys all so much. Like, you guys are literally helping out the show and keeping me on track, so thank you all. Like, it's crazy. And to all you other listeners out there as well, you're awesome. And if you want more spooky shit or to get involved with the show, drop me a follow at That Haunted Show, all one word, on Instagram. There you can find my link tree to the Patreon and the Buy Me A Coffee, and of course my website where you can find all the episodes and links to streaming platforms. So it's great. Also, there's a link directly to my Apple Podcast page there too, so if you want to drop a review, I'm just saying, 30 seconds, I'll read it out, raise a glass, help me please. Well, that's enough fucking begging. Like I said, we are on our season one finale, and I don't know what that fucking means. I'm not going anywhere, but hey, it's finale day. Like, I always decided I want to end on a round number, and weirdly enough, I started looking at season limits on TV and thought, screw it, I have decided. And here we are at season one, episode 20 fucking 4. Like, how the hell did we get here, right? That's like 24 weeks, man. Jesus Christ. I think what decided it was, like, I've got these old box sets of Supernatural, and I think they were like 24 episodes a season. I was like, that's the one. But this is the last episode of this season. Not that it makes any difference, because we are going to carry on next week, like always. But it will be season two. Hopefully better. Who knows? But, oh boy, are you in for a treat. This episode is going to be a long one. So much so, I've actually been sensible here. I've stocked up on snacks, water, whiskey. I've got a cup of coffee in my hand. It's a finale, after all. And I've been to the toilet. I'm fucking set right now. There is nothing that can distract me right now. I'm in the fucking zone. Unless my cat decides to attack me and my mic leads and make my mic arm fall again, but she's cute, so I'll let her off this time. So what I did, I put a poll up on Instagram, as I usually tend to do, and to choose a topic for this week's episode, and it is the Cecil Hotel and the mystery of Eliza Lamb and her tragic death. Now, I should put a disclaimer on this is quite factual and, like, fucking tragic. Like, this young woman died, so just saying, we're of course covering spooky shit as we always do, but this is a very real topic and goes into quite some detail, so hey, I try and set the mood and not traumatize you. Well, try at least. We start with the history of the hotel and its absolute tragic reputation, then we move gradually on to Eliza. We go with the flow, and you know how it works by now. I might flow off on a tangent on something ridiculously obscure. I wanted to also cover this soon because for some reason it's been getting so much hype. Like, my YouTube is spammed with, like, the Ghost Adventures episode there, and I'm not even mad because, you know, I love that shit. As well as, I hear Netflix is releasing, like, a whole documentary, like a 6-part series or like 4-part series on the whole case, which is awesome. Like, I probably should have watched before doing this episode on it, but my bad. Anyway, let's get on with it, shall we? Also, I'm going to say this right now before we get into this one. I don't want to do a 2-parter. It takes the fun out for me doing the same thing, doing the same topic next week, which, don't know about you, but this is shaping up to be quite a long one. Which, I'm already dreading editing, but we'll do it, man. Whenever I let you down, I'll release you. Rain, shine, anxiety, depression. You know I'm going to get the shit out. So let's do this. The Cecil was originally built and completed in 1924 by three hoteliers, which I didn't know was a word. Wouldn't believe English was the only lesson in school I liked, would you? Charles L. Dix. Now don't laugh. Robert H. Shops and William Banks Hanna. It was designed by Lester Smith in a Beaux Arts kind of style and constructed by W.W. Patton. Do people just not like first names anymore? Like, what the fuck? Do they just, like, not include them? Like, W.W. Patton. The hotel costs around $1.5 million to complete. And to put that in perspective at the time, I checked it out. And, right, here it is. I found a website that would convert it. And it works out to be around $20,672,539.68. So, yeah, just a bit of pocket money. The hotel, of course, was crazy and, like, so opulent of the time, and man, that's, like, my favourite word, I swear I use it too much. It featured marble lobbies, stained glass windows, potted palms, and alabaster statuary, which I have no fucking idea what that is, and I'm done googling, like, I'm just gonna pretend it's, like, a fancy statue, like, statue, sounds pretty familiar. 10 points if I'm wrong, drop me a message if you know. But basically, these three dudes dropped around $2.5 million in this hotel to try and build an enterprise, as due to the times, things were actually booming. There were rival hotels downtown, but of course they believed theirs was going to blow them out of the water, which, I mean, it kind of did, but we get into that. Tragically, only 5 years after opening, bam, depression came knocking, and I'm not talking about feeling a little bit sad here, we're talking about the great big fucking depression, like ruined economy, caused mass suicides, and royally screwed the states over, and the world too, for a time. So, although the hotel was doing amazing and flourishing for those 5 years, once that depression hit, wow, things hit the fan real quick. Basically, we skip forward as the hotel's reputation tarnished drastically, becoming home to people down on their luck, living out of rooms as they were all depraved now. The decades that followed were incredibly cruel to the hotel as it declined drastically. The area it was situated on is now known as Skid Row, and I'm not talking about the badass hair metal band with Sebastian Bach. I think that's his name. My trivia of, like, hair metal is ridiculous. That dude had some range. I think he was hitting, like, 5 octaves. Like, shit. Skid Row was home to around 10,000 homeless people living in just a 4-mile wide radius. That's like mass homelessness. And by just the 1950s, the hotel had gained a reputation of being the residence for transients. Basically, it was just super cheap, and people who couldn't afford their houses anymore, and if they were lucky enough to still have a job, they'd just hire a room indefinitely and live out of the hotel suite. As, of course, the area the hotel was located in declined, suicides and other malicious violent deaths began to ravage the premises, and becoming so frequent, it was like just becoming the norm these days. Like, get this right, I was doing some research on the place, and literally there is a Wikipedia page, like a full normal Wikipedia page, just dedicated and documenting everyone who died there. Like, that shit's crazy. Like, there's so many. We go over a few, but of course there's so many, there's no way I'm going to cover them all. The very first death via suicide at the Cecil was reported in 1931, when a guest named W.K. Norton died in the hotel room after taking poison capsules, which really doesn't sound like a pleasant way to die. Like, that shit will ravage your insides. I mean, there's probably no pleasant way to go, but I'm just saying, man, like, fuck. I know shit's tough, but nah, fuck, we're not even gonna... I'm not even willing or ready to get into that deep. Let's move on swiftly. The place got so ripe with suicides throughout the 40s and the 50s. By the time the swing and 60s came, people were beginning to call the Cecil Hotel the Suicide, which sounds like an absolutely lovely name. At least it was straight to the point, I guess. In addition to the sheer amount of suicides, the Cecil became home to many other kinds of violence and absolutely disturbing happenings. It also became the most notorious spot for adulterous couples. Drug activity was commonplace, as was sex workers. So it looks like people were getting out their faces, bumping uglies. Top notch. Drugs, sex workers everywhere, and depression was rife. No wonder this place was wild. Pretty much goes with the description at this stage. Like, right, you're down on your luck, drugs are everywhere, and there's sex workers in the room next to you. You're going to have the time of your life before you end it. Fuck. Also, in 1947, Elizabeth Shaw, who you may know better as the Black Dahlia, was spotted seen drinking at the Hotel Cecil's bar just days before her notorious death, which still to this day is an unsolved murder. Then, in 1964, a retired telephone operator. Seems crazy to think, like, there was actually telephone operators. Now, like, I can sit on the toilet, order a pizza, do my online banking, go for shopping, all while wiping my ass. Although, I wouldn't recommend it. Pigeon Goldie Oswald. Wait, is that his name? Like, shit. Is his first name Pigeon? I don't even know. 60s were wild, man. Everyone was off their faces in acid and smoking pot. Like, I let it slide. It was a girl. Sorry, Pigeon. She was a well-known resident at the hotel and staying there for months, like so many others, yet she was found dead in her room, and yeah, it wasn't nice. She was raped, stabbed, and beaten, and her room was completely ransacked and just trashed. Like, not long after, a man named Jacques B. Ellinger was charged with Osgood's murder, but was soon cleared, and once again, her death to this day remains unsolved. Man, we need to put this on, like, Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix, dude. Like, that show, like, I love that. During the 80s, the hotel came to be the new permanent residence of one Richard Ramirez, or better known as the Night Stalker. Ramirez was also a regular presence on Skid Row, which is in LA, by the way. I don't think I actually said where it was, but downtown LA, apparently. I mean, your American listeners probably know better than me. In fact, anyone with any kind of savvy probably knows better than me. Ramirez, or Mr. Night Stalker as I like to call him, began his infamous killing spree while staying there. And also, not too long after, in 1991, Jack Utenweger, an Austrian dude, which I shouldn't say dude, this fuckbag was a serial killer. And he was basically a copycat of the Night Stalker. And yeah, even going to as much detail as staying in the same room as him. Now this copycat, while spending time there, strangled and killed at least 3 sex workers. He was convicted in Austria, yet he hanged himself in his cell shortly after his conviction. Now, I'm definitely not an advocate for any violence, but if you kill someone, like, what the fuck? How does someone even get in that mindset? Like, it boggles my mind to end someone's life. Like, that's in your control. Also, the fact he beat the shit out of these women makes me hate his guts even more. Like I said, I don't advocate violence, but if you lay a hand on a woman, or God forbid you touch a fucking child, I don't know where you are, but I will find you. I'm going full Taken on you, Archie, motherfucker. Then finally, in 2013, we get to our story, and the hotel was rebranded to try and claw back some kind of reputation by naming itself the Stay on Main. Although retaining the old signage, like, I'm just saying, that's poor marketing. Like, it's still fucking, you've got the Cecil Hotel signs, like, outside the hotel. Like, you've got all this history, you're like, oh yeah, we'll change the name, but, oh yeah, we won't change the signs. So, like, anyone doing a quick Google before you book the room, like, you're gonna see all these deaths. Jesus Christ. Yeah, poor marketing. The hotel caught the attention of a Canadian student, Miss Eliza Lamb, who was seen on CCTV acting erratically in the hotel's elevator, causing a viral sensation. She was seen pressing loads of buttons, walking in and out, looking like she was on edge and hiding from someone. But the way her hands moved, like, fuck, it was scary, man. Like, I've watched the video multiple times, like, too many times, like, it's fucking playing when my eyes are closed, and yeah, it's messed up. Like, her body was found in the hotel's water supply cistern on the hotel roof. Now, this is the fucking, like, this is a grim bit. If you're eating, stop. Residents were complaining of odd-tasting water and poor water pressure. That's because it was decayed flesh, dude. Like, you drank that. Fuck. Even I feel sick. Like, how she got in there is still a mystery. Like, even the LA County Coroner just stated it as accidental drowning due to her having bipolar disorder. And due to her having bipolar disorder, it could have been a significant factor, which is just absolute fucking bollocks. Like, that's just crazy to me. How can you say it's a bipolar episode like that? Like, she was seen acting so strange, and it was just inhuman, like, the way she looked and her hands moving. Like, I know it could have been, like, a fit or something, but she looked terrified, man. And we get into this, we cover this later, but there's just no way she could have done it logically and get up there. And God knows, like, I'd love to find out how this all happened, man. It'd be crazy. Right, so I'm just going to read out a few of the deaths now. So, November 19th, 1931, Manhattan Beach resident W.K. Norton, 46, was found dead in his room after ingesting poison capsules. A week prior, he had checked into the Cecil under the name James Willis from Chicago. Norton's death appears to be the earliest known suicide in the hotel, too. September 1932, a maid found Benjamin Doddidge, 25, dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. He did not leave a suicide note. July 1934, former Army Medical Corps Sergeant Louis D. Borden, 53, was found dead in his room in the Hotel Cecil. He had slashed his throat with a razor. Borden left several notes, which one of them cited poor health as a reason for his suicide. Fuck. That's another thing, like, healthcare in the States, like, Jesus Christ, it's so expensive. I don't know how anyone copes, like, I don't know how the healthcare system works. Like, I just know you have to pay for it, like, we're fucking so lucky to have the NHS here, even though, like, I never fucking use it, but yeah, man, like, that shit's crazy. March 1937, Grace E. Magro fell from a ninth-story window. Her fall was broken by telephone wires, which wrapped around her body. She later died at the now-demolished Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. Police were unable to determine whether Margot's death was the result of an accident or suicide. Now, this is the grim one. Like, she was literally wrapped in the telephone wires and was hanging there for, like, God knows how long. Like, they actually couldn't get her down, which was fucked. I shouldn't laugh. Like, that was fucked. In January 1938, United States Marine Corps fireman Roy Thompson, 35, jumped from the Cecil's top floor and was found on the skylight of the neighbouring building. He had been staying in the Cecil for several weeks. He literally splattered on another building. Like, the next building was a restaurant, and he landed on the skylight. And apparently, like, this is all documented. People, like, eating and just saw, like, yeah, shit. Again, May 1939, Navy officer Irwin C. Neblett, 39, was found dead in his room after ingesting poison. January 1940, teacher Dorothy Seeger, 45, ingested poison. How are they getting all this fucking poison? This was reported by the LA Times to be near death. No further reports were published about her condition. Her death is listed as the Jan 12th on findadeath.com. Nice, informative. Oh, so she actually lived and then died at hospital. Okay, well, I say she lived. She actually didn't die in the room. She died at hospital after ingesting the poison a few days after. September 1944, Dorothy Jean Purcell, 19, who was sharing a room at the Cecil with her boyfriend, a shoe salesman named Ben Levine, 38. Purcell, who had apparently been unaware that she was pregnant, went into labour. She later testifies that she didn't want to disrupt her sleeping boyfriend, so she went to the bathroom where she gave birth to a baby boy. Thinking the baby was dead, she... Fuck. Alright, I'm reading this live. I didn't pre-read these, I'm sorry. Fuck. Yeah, I probably should have pre-read this. Like, thinking the baby was dead, she threw him out the window and he landed on the roof again. Oh no, don't laugh, fuck. Right. you know, fuck. you know the restaurant next door where the guy landed and splattered on the skylight? Again, she threw the baby out the window and it landed on the neighbor's skylight again. Yeah, shit. Purcell was charged with murder. The free psychiatrist known then as Alienist testified that she was mentally confused at the time of the incident, and in January 1945 she was found guilty by reason of insanity. Like, what the fuck? How? I just don't understand that. Like, how can she get away with just insanity? She threw a fucking baby out the window. Like, yeah, fair dues, like, she thought he was dead, but who the fuck, like, Who does that just because your boyfriend's sleeping? Jesus Christ. Anyway, moving on. November 1947, Robert Smith, 35, died from jumping from one of the Hotel Cecil's seventh floor windows. October 22nd, 1954, San Francisco stationery firm employee Helen Gurney, 55, jumped from the window of the seventh room floor and landed on top of the Cecil's marquee. 1 week prior, she registered at the hotel under the name of Margaret Brown. February 11th, 1962, Julia Frances Moore, 50, jumped from the window of the 8th floor room and landed on the second... Fuck! Landed next door again. Oh, no. If I was this restaurant next door, I would be suing the shit out of this place or putting up a fucking net. She did not leave a suicide note among her possessions. Fuck, I've got such a fucked up sense of humour. I'm so sorry. Among her possessions was a bus ticket from St. Louis and 59 cents in change and an Illinois bank book showing a balance of $1,800, which, adjusting for inflation, would be around $15,000. So, yeah, she was doing pretty well for herself. Nice. October 12, 1962, Paul Dean Otten, 27, jumped from the window of her ninth room bedroom after an argument with her estranged husband, Dewey. He had left the room prior to Otten's suicide. Otten... Fuck! I should have pre-read these. Fuck. Otto landed on a pedestrian, George Giannis, killing them both instantly. There were no witnesses. Police initially thought Otten and Gianni committed suicide together. However, it was soon determined that Gianni had his hands in his pockets at the time of his death and was wearing shoes. Had he jumped, his shoes would have literally fallen off during impact and his hands would not have been in his pockets. He was just taking a stroll, man, and some fucking woman lands on him. Shit. December 20th, 1975, a still unidentified woman, approximately 23 years old, jumps from the 12th floor window onto the Cecil's second floor roof. She had registered at the hotel on December the 16th under the name Alison Lowe and was staying in room 327. Also, I should probably say this now, a lot of people, because this was known as a bad hotel, right? People used aliases, and of course, because people are having like so many affairs here because of all the sex workers like banging next door, they use a different name, so go. September 1st, 1992, a man was found deceased in the alley behind the Cecil. Authorities believe that he either fell or jumped from or was pushed from the hotel's 15th floor. At the time of his death, the decedent was 5 foot 9 inches tall and weighed around 185 pounds. He was wearing blue sweatpants and a black sweatshirt over a grey t-shirt. The LA County Coroner's Office placed the decedent's age at 22 years old. The decedent's true identity has never been established. February 19th, 2013, the naked body of Eliza Lamb, a 21-year-old Canadian student, was found in one of the water supply tanks which we know about. Yeah, video surveillance was taken from inside the elevator shortly before her disappearance of her acting strangely, pressing multiple elevator buttons, hiding in the corner, waving her arms wildly, causing widespread speculation about the cause of her death. After the elevator video was released, many theories arose about Lamb's death. She was reported to have bipolar disorder, which she had been prescribed various medications, which could have contributed to her death, as well as the strange behaviour. However, rumours persist that she died as a result of playing the elevator game, a paranormal urban legend that claims to take the player to another dimension. More on that later. I have fucking covered everything. Like, this episode's going to be big, man. Like, all these little things I'm going to say we're covering later, and I never usually do, we are actually covering later. June 13th, 2015, the body of a 28-year-old man was found outside the hotel. Some conjectured that he may have committed suicide by jumping from the hotel, although a spokesperson for the county coroner infirmed LA Times the cause of death had not been determined. So yeah, it's pretty crazy, but we're going to get back onto Eliza's case now, because this is going to be the main topic of the episode, as well as looking into the actual hotel. So it actually took the LA County Coroner's Office a whole 4 months to release the final autopsy reports, which there was no physical trauma, simply stating it was an accidental drowning. The hotel was of course sued fucking hard over the incident. I mean, no surprise, people were literally drinking decaying flesh pretty much. And later that year, Lamb's parents filed a separate lawsuit, which was soon dismissed in 2015. How convenient. But this case gained huge amounts of internet clout due to the strange and unusual similarities between Eliza's death and the weird 2002 horror movie called Dark Water, as well as being referenced in a ton of pop culture, right? So I'm going to break down the life of Eliza right now. So Eliza was the daughter of immigrants from Hong Kong and a student at the University of British Columbia. She was planning a trip to California, having a little road trip, stopping at San Diego Zoo, posting pictures on her social media that we get to later because I actually found her social media page is still live, so it's quite interesting. Finally, on January 26th, she arrived in LA, and 2 days later, she checked into the infamous Cecil Hotel. Lam was initially in a shared room to keep the costs down on the fifth floor, but her roommate started complaining about her odd and peculiar behaviour, and she was moved to a room on her own after 2 days. Maybe I need to try this, like, act like a fucking nut and get upgraded to, like, the honeymoon suite or some shit. Food for thought, guys. Food for thought. Eliza was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and depression, having been prescribed 4 different medications to maintain it. But she did keep it to herself very well, and her family said no one would have known. She kept herself to herself. And she never forgot to take any medication in fear of someone finding out. Like any teenage girl back then, she blogged a lot. And having used Blogspot, posting fashion and accounts of her life and struggle with mental illness, and her online anonymity, Lam titled her post, "You're always haunted by the idea you're wasting your life," after the quotation from the novelist Chuck Palahniuk. She used the quote as the epigraph for her blog. A little over 2 years later, after Lam started blogging, she announced that she would be abandoning her blog for something she had started on Tumblr. Nouvelle Nouveau, its content mostly consisted of old-fashioned photos and quotes and a few posts in Lam's own words, and the same quote that was used as the epigraph. But we'll go into that in a bit more detail later. Let's move on quickly. So Eliza contacted her parents in British Columbia every day on her travels, like, without fail. Yet on January 31st, 2013, the day before she was scheduled to check out the hotel and head to Santa Cruz, her parents did not, in fact, hear from her, stating this as extremely odd. They called the LAPD immediately, flying over shortly to aid with the search themselves. Staff at the hotel stated they had seen Lam that day and she was alone. Outside the hotel, though, a Miss Orphan, who was the manager of a nearby bookstore, was the only person who recalled seeing her that day. She quoted, "She was outgoing, very lively, and very friendly. She was in the store purchasing gifts to take back home to her family, and she stated in an interview to CNN she was talking about the book she was getting, whether or not it would be too heavy for her to carry around as she travelled," Orphan added. Police thoroughly searched the hotel to the extent they could by the law. They searched Lam's room and had dogs go in and out of every floor in the building, but the canines were unsuccessful in even detecting a single scent of her. They couldn't search every room as they needed probable cause that a crime had been committed, so maybe if they did have access to it, it might be a different story altogether. Like, shit, maybe something happened. I'm not going to go into my own theories yet, but there's no way she could have got in there by herself. Like, maybe she was in a room being held before she was dumped in there. Like, fuck, I don't know. On February 6, a week after she had last been seen, the LAPD realised they were in over their head and decided more help was needed. Flyers with the image were posted everywhere all around the neighbourhood and online, bringing mass interest to the public via the media. The video was reposted widely, including in the Chinese video site Youku, where it got 3 million views and 40,000 comments in the first 10 days. Many of the commenters, like me, found it very unsettling to watch, and several theories evolved to explain her actions. One was that Lam was trying to get the elevator to actually move in order to escape someone who was pursuing her. Others suggested that she might be under the influence of ecstasy and some other party drug, but none were detected in her body. Once her bipolar disorder had become known, the theory that she was having a psychotic episode also emerged. Other viewers argued that the video had been tampered with before being made public. Besides the obscuring of the timestamp, they claimed that parts had been slowed down and nearly a minute of footage had been discreetly removed, which, how convenient again. This could have been done simply to protect the identity of someone otherwise who would be in the video, or who had little or nothing to do with the case, or conceal evidence if Lam's disappearance and the death had been the result of a criminal act, and maybe someone in the hotel actually knows what was going on. Just a little bit of tea for you there. During the search for Lam, guests at the hotel began complaining about low water pressure. Some later claimed that the water was coloured black and had an unusual fuck, and had an unusual taste. Yeah, it definitely would, and the fact the water was black, like, oh man, It's grim, the thought that she was in that tank and that was the hotel's water supply, right? They were showering with that water, drinking it, bathing in it. Oh my fuck. On the morning of February 19th, Lam's body was found in the 1,000-gallon, 378.5 litres, tanks, providing water to the guest rooms, a kitchen, and a local coffee shop. Oh shit. Imagine that in your latte, fuck. The tank was drained and cut open since its maintenance hatch was too small to accommodate equipment needed to remove Lam's body. So this is what I'm saying, like, they couldn't physically get her out. Like, it was a really tight way to get in through the maintenance hatch, yeah. And yeah, she was in there, and also she was naked as well, but yeah. Like, how the hell that happened, I don't know. On February 21st, the LA Coroner's Office issued a finding of the accidental drowning with bipolar disorder as a significant factor. A full coroner's report was released in June, stating that Lam's body had been found naked. Clothing similar to what she was wearing in the elevator video was found floating in the water, coated with a sand-like particulate. Also, her watch and room key were also found with her. Sand. That's weird. I feel like a detective right now. I really want to fucking dive into this shit. Lam's body was moderately decomposed and bloated. It was mostly greenish with some marbling evident on the abdomen and skin separation evident. Shit. There was no evidence of physical trauma, sexual assault, or suicide. Toxicology tests were incomplete because not enough of her blood was preserved. Yet, it did show traces consistent with the prescription medication found among her belongings, plus non-prescription drugs such as Sinotab and ibuprofen, and also a very small quantity of alcohol, about 0.02 g, but no other recreational drugs. The investigation had determined how Lam died, but did not offer an explanation how she got into the tank in the first place. Dawson's stairs that access the hotel's roof are locked, with only staff having the passcode and keys, and any attempt of force would supposedly have triggered an alarm. However, the hotel's fire escape could have allowed her to bypass those security measures, if she or someone who might have accompanied her there had known. A video made by a Chinese user after Lam's death posted to the internet showed the hotel's roof was easily accessible via the fire escape, and that two of the lids of the water tanks were actually open. Alright, so that's an interesting theory, that this guy had actually uploaded a video looking into it himself, and the lids for the water tanks were open. Also, that's just a bit grim, like, that's the water supply, like, anything could fly in there, like, that's fucked up. Apart from the question how she got onto the roof, others asked if she could have gotten into the tank by herself. All four tanks are 4x8 feet, which is 1.2 or by 2.4 meters, cylinders propped up on concrete blocks. There is no fixed access to them, and hotel workers literally had to use a ladder to look into the water. They are protected by heavy lids that would be difficult to replace from within. Police dogs that had searched the hotel for Lam, even on the roof, shortly after her disappearance was noted and didn't find a single trace of her. Theories about Lam's behaviour in the elevator video did not stop with her death. Some argued that she was attempting to hide from her pursuer, perhaps someone ultimately responsible for her death, while others stated she was merely frustrated with the elevator's apparent malfunction. Also, what the hell, so the dogs were on the roof and they couldn't pick up a single scent from her, like, it's just, there's so many weird facts about it, like, I just can't understand, right? How can the dog be on the roof and not discover a single scent? Like, those sniffer dogs, they're fucking smart, man. They can smell anything. They can track down so much stuff, yet, man, I don't know. I reckon she was put in there, like, she was there the whole time, and she was put in there somehow by someone who had just got back from the beach, and that explains the motherfucking sand. Bam, case solved. That haunted show, credit it. Thank you very much. What the shit? I'm losing my mind. Some proponents of the theory that said that she was under the influence of illicit drugs, which are not dissuaded by their absence from the toxicology screen, it's suggested that they might have broken down during the time period of her body being decomposed in the tank, or that she might have taken a rare cocktail of drugs, such drugs from a normal screen would not be detected. The autopsy report and its conclusions have also been questioned. For instance, it does not say the results of the rape kit and the fingernail kit were, or if they even were, actually processed. It also records pooling of the blood in Lam's anal area, which some observers suggested as a sign of sexual abuse. However, one pathologist has noted that it could be the result from bloating in the course of the body's decomposition, and her rectum has also prolapsed. Like, fuck. It could happen if your body's bloating, everything's being pushed out, but Jesus Christ. Was there no rape kit, like, even done? Was it not even a factor to consider? Like, again, another kind of factor that has just been widely overlooked by some ridiculous reason. This makes me angry. I should have done a happy topic for the season finale, right? Even the coroner's pathologists appeared to be ambivalent about the conclusion of Lam's death was accidental. Since her death, her Tumblr blog has been updated, presumably though through Tumblr's queue option, which allows people to publish automatically for themselves when the user is away. Which is another odd factor, like, why would she schedule some posts when she could have accessed it on her travels? Like, was this all some kind of planned thing? Like, we'll look at the posts after. I wonder if they're, like, intricate or drop hints to, like, what actually happened. Interesting. Her phone was not found either with her body or in her hotel room. It has been assumed to have been stolen around the time of her death. Whether the continued updates to her blog were facilitated by the theft of her old phone or the work of a hacker through the queue, it's not known, nor is it known whether the updates are related to her death. So yeah, that's another interesting theory. Like, yeah, of course, the criminal, maybe, the criminal who potentially has her phone could be updating it and just, like, trolling people and being, like, some sick kind of sadist and posting for her on her behalf. You know, some people get a kick out of that. If you're getting a kick out of killing, you're fucked up. So, we know her parents filed a lawsuit against the hotel, but I actually found a few court documents, so here we go. David and Yina Lam filed a wrongful death suit against the Cecil Hotel several months after her daughter's death was uncovered. The Lam's attorney stated that the hotel had a duty to inspect and seek out hazards in the hotel that presented unreasonable risk of danger to Lam and other hotel guests. The hotel fought back against the suit, filing a motion to dismiss it, and the hotel's lawyer argued that the hotel had no reason to think that someone would be able to get in one of their water tanks. Based on the court statements from the hotel's maintenance staff, the hotel's argument is not entirely far-fetched. Santiago Lopez, who was the first to find Lam's body, described in detail how much effort he had to exert just to find her body. Now, this is pretty messed up. This guy actually had an actual mission to find her body. Like, this is how difficult it was to access the water tanks, and somehow she managed to do all this herself and climb in there naked. But in like January or February as well, I should add, when was it, like end of Jan? Yeah, so in like January, when it's like, it's probably fucking freezing. I don't know the weather in LA in January, but yeah, January's a cold month, man. Yeah, so she would have been naked on a fucking roof. Jesus Christ, like, it's just not adding up. Lopez said that he took the elevator to the 15th floor of the hotel before walking up the staircase to the roof. Then he had to first turn off the rooftop's alarm and climb up on a platform where the hotel's four water tanks were located. Finally, he had to climb another ladder to get to the top of the main tank. Only after all that did he notice something unusual. I noticed the hatch, the main water tank, was open and looked inside and saw an Asian woman lying face up in the water, approximately 12 inches from the top of the tank. Fuck. Only a foot from the top of the tank and just staring at you. This dude, I hope the hotel paid for his fucking therapy, man. As reported by the LAist, Lopez's testimony suggested that it would have been difficult for Lam to make it to the top of the water tank on her own, at least not without anyone noticing. The hotel's chief engineer, Pedro Tovar, also made it clear that it would be difficult for anyone to access the rooftop, where the hotel's water tanks were located, without triggering the alarms. Only hotel employees would be able to deactivate the alarm properly. If this was triggered, the sound of the alarm would reach the front desk and the entire top floors of the hotel. Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Howard Harm ruled that the death of Eliza Lam was unforeseeable because it had happened in the area guests were not allowed to access. So the lawsuit was in fact dismissed. Also, I did a bit of sneaky detective work and I tried to look up staff members and, well, sadly it looks like Netflix beat me to it. But hey, joke's on you fuckers, mine's being released first. I actually found the written interview which is being featured and like filmed for their show, but please don't sue me. So I'm going to read this article out and let you guys have a little insight here and chuck in my own thoughts too. Amy Price thought she was going into a great new job at the Los Angeles Hotel, upgrading its rooms and helping to boost bookings. But she didn't bargain for the effect the notorious Cecil Hotel would have on her, or the incredible events that would unfold there. Amy was the Hotel Cecil's general manager from 2007 to 2017, which includes being in charge in 2013 when the college student Eliza Lam went missing for weeks and was found naked and dead in one of the hotel's water tanks. That was just one of the many deaths at the horror hotel. Ahead of the new Netflix series looking into the hotel and deaths that took place, Amy shares the secrets of her experiences there. Amy said she had no idea of the hotel's checkered history and took the job there without being interviewed. Alright, so it looks like you don't even get interviewed for this place. They hire like fucking anybody. I mean, if you're working there and actually know the hotel's reputation, you've got to be pretty fucking crazy, right? So, anyway, this is a quote by her. One of my girlfriend's husbands needed help at the hotel and I wasn't working at the time, so I said, well, I've got the time, I'll do it. And that's how it all started. I didn't even research what it was. All I heard was the hotel was in downtown LA and I walked in completely blind, she said. Pretty soon after I started, someone in the hotel actually passed away. It was so shocking, I remember asking one of the other employees, does this happen a lot, he said. He said, yes. And that was the first. I saw around 80 deaths in my 10 years there. Okay, so it looks like the deaths I read out earlier were just suicides. And of course, babies being thrown out windows. But it looks like there was 80 more deaths in just the 10 years she was there from 2007 to 2017. Like, what? Hotel Cecil was linked to some of the most notorious crimes and criminals in LA, making the 700-room budget hotel the stuff of urban legends. It's no surprise that sinister events became the inspiration for the Netflix horror drama American Horror Story, with season 5's Hotel reimagining the many sinister events that happened at the Cecil. However, former employee Amy says she does not believe the hotel is a magnet for tragic occurrences. There's a darkness everywhere you go. Of course, a lot of bad things have happened to me, and so many different elements to the Cecil. I think it's nice to have a real story about the hotel's history, not just Richard Ramirez lived there. Ramirez was a serial killer and serial rapist, kidnapper, paedophile, and burglar whose home invasion spree terrorised the residents of LA from June 1984 to 85. He stayed at the Cecil until he was captured. The whole time I worked there, I couldn't even tell you what room he was in, said Amy. There are so many other things about the Cecil that are far more interesting to me. I don't come from a ghost or goblin background, she added. I do believe in ghosts, but the place reminds me of all the people I got to work and bond with. That we were all able to get through all this stuff, so I was able to learn so much from them. Most of the people who worked there came from very different backgrounds to me. It had so much autonomy there, I handled everything, and I reported directly to the owners. Crime Scene: The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel debuts on Netflix on February the 10th. I should probably say this so Netflix don't fucking sue me or some shit. Also, I just found some reviews on the company by former and current employees, and I thought they'd be fun and spooky, but sadly it's just like, I did the graveyard shift, pros, I got paid, cons, not enough, well, fuck it. I tried, guys, I thought there'd be some spooky reviews about the actual, like, the workload there, or some experiences, people seeing ghosts of, like, Richard Ramirez and the other serial killers who have lived there, like, because there seems to be just a ridiculous amount of, like, serial killers who have spent their time at the Hotel Cecil. It's just fucking crazy to me. Okay, so I found another interview, and this one's by the man himself, Zach Baggins, from Ghost Adventures, which, if you didn't already know, trust me, people say names to me all the time and expect me to know, like, no, listen here, I don't even know what, like, my name is, let alone other people, but the interview is pretty boring, sadly, so I'm gonna just read out little snippets where it gets good and where he actually talks about the hotel, because it seems like the interviewer was actually, like, fangirling over him, so thank you, heavy.com. So, zeroing in on the Cecil Hotel, what made you pick this hotel for your investigation? The elevator footage of Eliza Lam and the tragic and mysterious circumstances of her death have haunted me for years. In a place like this with so... there's like so many O's. Much dark history, serial killers, devil worshipping, which I didn't come across any devil worshipping inside the rooms. Maybe you made that up. I mean, you got to get that content out there somehow. Murder and suicide, you can't help but theorise that she might have been affected by some dark unseen force. This place allows no one to investigate, to finally get permission to investigate after 10 years of countless requests, and to have the whole building closed to the public is monumental for us. Everyone has to watch this special. Pleading for those views, I know the feeling. But it makes a lot of sense. I didn't realise no one could actually investigate there, which seems kind of shady that they're not allowing anyone to actually investigate the premises. But hey, he did a whole investigation and I'll have to check it out because it's really apparently, like, I've seen snippets and it looks really fucking good. Plus, I love Ghost Adventures, man. Like, I can't not. Well, what struck you as the most odd thing about Lam's death? What stands out for me is her behaviour in the elevator and how she ended up in the water tank with so many questions about how she could have gotten onto the roof with the access still locked and alarmed. They ruled her death as accidental, but how could she have closed the heavy metal lid to the tank after she allegedly jumped in? And why did her clothes have some sandy particulate in them, like showing they fell to the ground? Why would she go pick them back up and throw them in the tank? If she was having a manic episode from her bipolar disorder, how could she have performed such a calculated journey to end up in the rooftop tank? I heard the Cecil Hotel has been an inspiration for many books, movies, even American Horror Story. Two serial killers lived there and the Black Dahlia was found murdered there. What can you tell us about what you found during your investigation? Well, we discovered that the building would affect everyone's mental state. We had multiple interviewees that had to end the interview from this. One of them worked for the LAPD as a crime scene photographer. Imagine what would take someone who had this type of job to see what he's seen to end an interview for being so disturbed by the dark energy in Eliza Lam's old room. The energy is inconceivable. You can feel the spirits moving around you everywhere, passing through you and watching you. I've never felt so uneasy in a hotel in my life. The hotel marked me physically, on camera. So he's done the usual. You've got some physical marking, which you can't even see on camera, which is on camera, apparently. But hey, he's obviously got some crew to give him a little cheeky scratch. But I can't blame him. I still watch this shit every week. We captured some of the most incredible audio evidence in Eliza Lam's old room. Also, this keeps popping up that they did the investigation in Eliza's old room. But even just logically, that's not the place she died. Yeah, she was staying there, but she actually stayed in two different rooms. And why was she killed in her room? Someone hid her and then put her in the tank? I don't know. But the focus of the investigation all seems to be in her room, which just seems odd to me. Plus, it's a hotel, like, so many people have been in that room living and working and doing all sorts, so... Like, over time, has it kind of been diluted? I don't know, with, like, that many people coming in and out. Oh, here we go. And they also investigate the room of the serial killer who lived there while he was killing. So I presume that's either Richard Ramirez or that copyright killer, or even the Austrian dude who was a serial killer as well. There's, like, fucking so many there. Poltergeist activity was documented, and we captured a sequence of events and evidence that proved to us that dark forces and spirits are in there, and they can manipulate you. We captured something on camera that was a full manifestation of an entity near a black mass on a door. We could not debunk this as a piece of evidence. This is a place that you will never forget. It's different, just so different. We know a lot about the case and all the weird happenings, like, the shit's bizarre, man. But here's where it gets a bit more strange. Here are the top theories on how she died. Theory 1, Eliza was murdered. Eliza appears to be looking behind her in the CCTV footage of her last minutes alive. She hides in the corner of the lift as if she's being followed, but no one follows her in. Other questions how a petite young woman could have gotten to the tank in the first place. The tanks are huge, all 4x8 feet. The hotel had a bad reputation and housed rapists and serial killers before. What had attracted her to this hotel in the first place? It's cheap, like dirt cheap. She was doing like a tour of the States, so that could definitely be a factor. I know I'd probably stay there if it was dirt cheap. Yeah, maybe not if I knew there was rapists and serial killers there. Even I'd probably avoid that. Theory 2, Eliza was on hallucinogenic drugs, which I can debunk this straight away because in the toxicology reports, there was no other kind of recreational drugs in her system. There's just ibuprofen and something else, which is just like painkillers and anti-inflammatories, right? So this must be bollocks, but we read it out anyway. In the same video of Eliza in the lift, taken on February the 1st, 2013, the student is acting strangely. She walks into the lift in the hotel wearing a red hoodie and pressing lots of buttons. As a result of her strange behaviour, the video is unsettling to watch. The coroner's report disputes this. Well, yeah. Then that's not even a theory if the coroner's report disputes this, but then again, the coroner didn't even do a rape kit on her, and her rectum was prolapsed, which could definitely be a sign of rape and abuse. Then again, like they did say, it could be due to basically her bloating, taking on so much water and being in that tank for God knows how long. I can't remember how long she was in that tank, like a week, maybe a bit longer. Theory 3, she died by suicide. Eliza was on medication for a bipolar disorder and depression, but however, she had no history of suicidal intentions or attempts, according to her family. Eliza discussed her struggle with mental illness on a blog called Ever Fields. Now, this was a blog on like Blogspot or wherever it was, not the Tumblr account. In a January 2012 post, she described a recent relapse at the start of a school term. A Cecil Hotel lawyer would describe her behaviour as odd. Some believe she had a psychotic episode which led to her taking her own life. According to Eliza's autopsy, she'd only taken her prescribed stimulant medication, but neither of the stabilizers. This may have led to a manic episode, which can cause some bipolar sufferers to experience hallucinations or psychosis. So she's had like the antidepressants, but hasn't had the mood stabilizers. So she had the actual antidepressants, but didn't have any of the mood stabilizers, which can experience hallucinations or psychosis, which, I mean, I'm no medical expert. I mean, it could happen. But yeah, it seems unlikely as she was so, like, precise about taking her medication. She didn't want anyone to know she actually had bipolar disorder. And even the accounts of her family and some of her friends, like, were they not close friends and she didn't open up to them? Like, no one would have known she had bipolar disorder, which is, yeah, definitely an account, and which is definitely a factor to take in because it just goes to show that she kept herself to herself. There are also other theories, which I'll read a few out now. Eliza was playing the Korean elevator game, says some. The ritual of pressing buttons on the lift in a certain order to reach another dimension. The hotel altered the CCTV video prior to its release, believe others. She commented on the similarities between Eliza's death and the 2005 horror film Dark Water. I've got it written down as 2002. Who knows? Even so, a horror film called Dark Water, check it out if you want. In the film, mother and daughter move into a rundown apartment building. A dysfunctional elevator and discoloured water gushing from the building's taps eventually led to the building's rooftop water tank. They find the body of a girl who had been reported missing in the building a year earlier. Some theories of the paranormal was involved. Now, I looked up the aforementioned elevator game and it's pretty fucked up. So, I'm going to break down some of the rules now. Like, I'm not recommended doing this, but hey, if you do it and you go to another dimension, let me know. That's if you make it back. There is a certain way to get back. Otherwise, some people can actually stay there and you basically, yeah, you die. It's not good. So, needed to play. One player. There are conflicting reports on this that it could be played with others. One set of instructions we found says that you can, but keep in mind that everyone quits mid-ride, so you have to start from the beginning. And you need a 10-story building with at least one elevator. So how to play, getting to the other world. Enter the elevator alone or with your friends but no one else. Do not get out on any of the floors. If any outsiders get on the elevator, you need to start over. Which actually, she was going in and out of the elevator right in the CCTV footage, so that kind of goes against the rules. Maybe she forgot the rules, I don't fucking know. So here are the steps. Proceed to the fourth floor, descend to the second floor, proceed to the sixth floor, return to the second floor, ascend to the tenth floor, return to the fifth floor. When you reach the fifth floor, it's then said that people report encountering a young woman. You're instructed not to look at or interact with her. She may or may not try talking to you, asking for help or antagonizing you. Press the button for the first floor, and now two things might happen. If the elevator descends to the first floor, exit immediately and do not look back or speak. If the elevator starts to go up, you've been allowed into the other world. When you reach the 10th floor, things might look significantly different. No one else will be there. The power might be out. Some claim to look out windows and only see a red cross in the distance. If you chose to exit the elevator, you should ignore the woman's attempts to question you or stop you. What the fuck? So, if you look out the windows, you're going to see a red cross in the distance. Like, is this some, like, version of hell with, like, some fucking flaming crucifix or some shit? It sounds pretty messed up. And there's a lot of rules to this, like, who's this woman appearing? Is she, like, the guardian of another world? Which actually makes sense. If it's some kind of pool, like, I'm not saying it is, this is just a theory I'm just kind of throwing out there. Like, when we covered the staircase episode, you had, like, if you go with the theory that I think they're kind of portals, you had the kind of stairway and portal guardian. So, I mean, it could make sense this woman's there as, like, some guardian to hell or the other world or wherever the hell it is. So the next step is returning from the other world. If you choose to stay in the elevator and not to explore, just press the button for the first floor and return home. You might have to keep pressing the button to work. Okay, so then again, I can't actually remember where the CCTV footage was, like, what floor it actually was on. Maybe she was frantically pressing the button to return, I'm not sure. If you choose to get off the elevator and explore, there are a few rules to follow in order to properly return to your home world. You must use the same elevator you used in to arrive. Follow steps 2 to 7, finishing on the 5th floor. Floor sequence is 4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 5. When you reach the 5th floor, press the button and return to the 1st floor. The elevator will attempt to return to the 10th floor. Instead, begin pressing the upper floor numbers to stop the elevator before you reach the 10th floor. And proceed to the 1st floor. When you reach the 5th floor, press the button to return to the 1st floor. Fuck. Proceed to the 1st floor again. Upon reaching the 1st floor, check your surroundings. If anything seems off, even the smallest detail, do not get off the elevator. Repeat steps 2 until things start to look normal. Once you're confident and you've returned to the real world, exit the elevator. Thinking about it, maybe she was playing this game, right? Because there's a lot of weird kind of coincidences. She was kind of looking in and out. Maybe she did notice something was actually off. And like when she's looking and kind of taking in her surroundings, maybe she did play the game and open up some fucking portal. Like, and things didn't look quite right and she didn't want to leave and stay in that world. That's why she was kind of rushing in and out looking. And she looked really strange, like how her hands were kind of holding herself. And yeah. It was messed up. This game was messed up. Like, I don't recommend playing this, but if you're going to play it, let me know, because I am sure as hell not doing it. Like I mentioned earlier, I actually found her Tumblr, which is novelle-nouveau.tumblr.com. So I'm on it now. The last post was in 2013. So if we kind of have a look now, there's a lot of notes on here. I don't really know how to use Tumblr. I'm just trying to figure it out right now. The last post is from December 2013, and it has 1,428 notes, which is, let me just look at it. It is like a light bulb hanging, and in the light bulb is like a snowy scene with a little cabin and a single tree. And then again, you're always haunted by the idea you're wasting your life, which is the quote, which was on our old blog. Again, the post before that was in June the 2nd, 2013. Now this is just a very colourful fashion outfit, because I heard she was very fashion orientated. And then April 2013, there's only 3 posts. March 2013, 4 posts. And then February 2013, there's loads of posts. So this was obviously when she was active. No, actually, February 2013, she would have been dead by then, right? She died January 2013. The 31st was when she was reported missing. When she did make the phone call to her parents. So I'm just looking, there's loads of like, yeah, it's just full of fashion gifts and just kind of sad notes. Like, yeah, I know Tumblr is used as like some kind of diary and shit like that, But it does seem that she was trying to reach out and trying to get some help. So there is a quote here. I wish I could put part of my brain in a taped shut box and shove it back in the closet for the rest of the night. So yeah, she's obviously dealing with some kind of stuff, which just loading up more. My laptop screen is brighter than my future. Well, she had a sense of humor, I guess. If we go back to her after the death, so we'll start from February. She posted February 1st, 2013, which is just a table and chairs. Really odd. Again, February, this is like a Japanese family, like traditional Japanese house. Then what else have we got? Then another quote, then another quote, and I hope I don't get censored for this. Cunt again. And another quote, cunt again. It was odd how men used to use that word to demean women when it was only the part of woman that they valued. Okay, very deep, very deep. And yeah, it's just loads of quotes. Introverts in contrast may have strong social calls and enjoy parties for business meetings, but after a while they wish they were home in their pajamas. They prefer to devote their social energies to close friends, colleagues and their family. They listen more than they talk, think before they speak, and often feel as if they express themselves better in writing than in conversation. They tend to dislike conflict. Many have a horror of small talk but enjoy deep discussions. Which, yeah, I guess is very true. Also, a gif of Karen Gillan. Nice, Amy Pond. Top notch. Appreciate it. And then some Hobbit gifts. I'm trying to see if there's any kind of darker notes, but take in mind, this is all posted after her death. There's loads, like Jesus Christ, I'm not even going to attempt to count these. But then, yeah, so this could all be scheduled, but there's a lot to schedule. Could someone do that? I mean, I don't use Tumblr. Is that something you do, schedule like a whole month's post? So let's look at the ones in March. And in March, there's another quote. Why, she reflected, should there be a perpetual disparity between the thought and action, between the life of solitude and the life of society? This astonishing precipice on one side, the soul was active in broad daylight, and on the other side of which, it was contemplative and dark as night. Then it's just some more fashionable pictures. Then there's a video. The video is not available. Okay. And yeah, last one, December 2013, is the light bulb with the little scene inside it, which is almost like a year after her death. So that's pretty tragic. Seems like she was reaching out. Like, her Tumblr is full of like fashionable pictures, cute gifts, posts of art and such. And there's a mix of some very depressing quotes that, looking back, seemed as if she was, in fact, like reaching out in some kind of way. But then there was a lot of like uplifting stuff about it. There was no kind of telltale signs that she was clinically depressed or really upset or anything like that. But then again, she didn't like to talk about it. We know that for fact. So it could be something she hid to herself. And of course, the Tumblr page is Nouvelle Nouveau, which isn't her name. Her name's not anywhere on the page, so it was some kind of online anonymity which she could post this. In fact, it was, yeah, really sad that the quotes are there, and it did seem, in a sense, that she was reaching out. Like in many ways, Linkin Park and, like, Chester Bennington. Like, you can't listen to his songs without, that, like, hearing that undertone anymore. It's so powerful, and it was, like, there in front of our eyes. So please, if you're dealing with shit, reach out to either me, or I will link you places directly in the show notes. Do not suffer alone and don't suffer in silence. Like, I hope there's others around. Reach out. Times are tough enough as it is right now. And hey, if I can make your day even slightly better with like a fucking awful joke, a catch up, it would just be worth it. So yeah, do not suffer alone. Also, a side note, the whole Chester and Chris Cornell death conspiracy is like crazy. Like, I can't remember the full details, so I won't ruin any credibility for you. But you should definitely look into it. They were onto something, but rest in peace, you two legends. Like, I always love Audioslave. Chris Cornell had some power, man. Like, that compression and his screaming like Coach is by Audioslave. Like, that's pure fucking wild vocal compression. I remember one time a few years back, me and my buddy, we used to drive around and sing loud and at night. Not get judged for doing that at home. Like, we would try and recreate some of the best rock screams, like Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who, like Roger Daltrey's the champ. But there is one dude who was like beyond belief. His range is crazy, and that is Miljenko Macevic. Now, you should definitely look him up. His band is still hot. He's also done some solo work, but his life has been incredibly fucking sad. Like, he had a stage basically like the huge steel struts like collapse on his face and just fuck him up, and then the band were like, nah, I'm done whilst he's in hospital. But he managed to build it back up, and he's doing well for himself, so good on you. Anyway, I definitely got lost in a tangent there talking about music. Moving on anyway, back to the actual story, which is why we're here in the first place. Well, shit, like they said, the paranormal could have been involved, that was a theory, and fuck yeah, it was. This is my forte. So this place is literally ripe with death and decay, and the most heinous crimes imaginable must be home to some serious negative energy, right? Like, I know times are tough for people staying in there, but this place was such a force and a magnet to cause all these people to commit suicide. It was something about the hotel that pushing these people, pushing these already struggling people off the edge, like, sometimes literally. Fuck, poor joke. Bad taste. Get it, they drank the water as well. But of course, it was the Great Depression as well, so people were already on the edge going to this place, and just some kind of negative energy there was really kind of tipping people over the edge. But it seems to have gone on forever, being home to serial killers too, who murdered multiple people in the hotel itself. Like, what kind of fucked up place is this? And how is it still running with all these souls who were just ripped apart there? To me, this is just my reasoning towards how the hotel and this place is seriously fucking haunted. Like, people are being pushed towards suicide so the place can harness more energy and, like, more souls. And to me, more souls possibly means more power. Like, who knows? At this rate, the amount of souls they have there, it wouldn't surprise me if it fucking opened like a portal straight to hell, like something out of Supernatural, man. Like, absolutely wild. And some of these deaths and crimes are just so dark and grim, it's beyond me that how this place hasn't just been boarded up and shut down. If there is activity there, I can tell you for a fact it probably isn't going to be good. Maybe some people potentially reaching out and using it as like a warning, but I think something evil definitely lurks there. Like, it gets in your head and makes you commit the most atrocious acts going. I mean, I hope not. I've never come across a place with such dark history as this. Yeah, it's such a pop culture icon. Like, people are traveling there to try and experience something. Like, dude, yeah, me too, I definitely would, but we're fucked up and crazy. Also, I heard, like, it's quite a common place. Like, loads of people have stayed there. So, like, if anyone has stayed there, I've even got some comments on one of my posts about this, about some dude who stayed there. He didn't experience anything weird. Didn't know the hotel's history, but yeah, no experiences. But if you guys have stayed there, do get in touch. I'd love to know what you thought of the place while you were there. Also, I think I mentioned how Ghost Adventures were doing an episode there, right? Like, I hope so. If not, yeah, I'm pretty sure I did earlier. But I finally watched it, and they have their own theory, which I just found out. And, like, a huge thank you to Becky for actually recommending this episode, because I finally watched it, and it was so good. But they had, like, this most ridiculous wild theory that just, it just made me laugh. But, hey, I'll believe anything, hence why I'm running a paranormal show. Their theory is that Richard Ramirez's spirit still resides there, and he is swaying the people's own free will in a twisted act, so it appears he is now a serial killer from beyond the grave. Wild theory, right? Like, Zach, dude, if you need some batshit crazy theories, hire me to write something up for me. Also, a big shout out to Aaron, who's liked multiple of my comments now. We're basically best friends. Just waiting for that follow back, dude, just saying. Also, an invite on the show would be premium. We can chat shit together, or you come on my show, man. So, Aaron, what are you saying, man? Like, I love the show. I've watched it since the beginning, like, years ago. And, like, Zach was always my favourite, because, you know, main man, look at 12, all that. But then, as I got older, I started to realise, like, the shit Aaron gets put through. Like, I feel so bad for him. Like, whenever something serious is going on, and, like, the activity's getting really dark, they're like, oh, yeah, Aaron, you go down to the basement alone. And he's, like, in there alone with, like, the worst activity going, and he's like, hello, spirits. Or, like, when he gets messages about, like, the spirit is especially, like, angry with him, and they're like, yeah, yeah, what you need to do is just go in there alone. Like, I feel so bad for him. I absolutely dread to think how long this episode is going to end up, as it's my most researched episode I've done by a long shot. Like, the Bellwitch phenomena story was wild, and that took me so long. But I've been working on this for ages now, and scrolling through all my notes, like, fuck, we finally did it. Give yourself a pat on the back, pour a drink, have a cigarette, whatever your coping mechanism is, it's over. Like, I hope you have enjoyed this episode. It's been a long one. We are finally getting through it. I don't even know what the time is right now. I think we're about an hour and a half. Yeah. So by the time this is edited down and I get rid of all my fuck-ups, yeah, it might be drastically less. It might only be half an hour. Who actually knows? This has been absolutely wild. My throat is killing me, but thank you all so much for listening. You are amazing. I do the show for you, but I couldn't do it without you. Talking to you all makes my day a little bit better, and the momentum we're going, like, there is no stopping us. So if you want to help out in any way you can, the Patreon is linked on the Instagram, as is the Buy Me A Coffee, but let's be serious, you don't have to do that. The one thing I would really appreciate more than anything else, and it's super easy, it's free, it takes like 30 seconds. The direct link to my Apple Podcast page is in my link tree in the Instagram bio. So if you could do that, you're an absolute diamond. We are finally here. Here is the end. I feel like I don't want to end this. Like, I've been recording for God knows how, like, an hour and a half. But then I've had breaks in between. I've made like multiple cups of coffee, and I feel like I just don't want this to end. But I will cite all my credits and sources, which have been Netflix, like I said, Please Don't Sue, Wikipedia, themirror.co.uk, BuzzFeed, but of course, less said about that, the better. Facebook, weirdly enough, and no thanks to Zark. Some of you awesome followers also recommended stuff, like Becky, like I mentioned earlier, you're a star. CNN, and so many other sites, my stupid ass forgot to copy the links, and yeah, I've lost the articles, so yet again. Listen here, lawyers. I run a podcast, I chat shit on obscure topics. Look the other way, please. Weirdly enough, I now feel like I want to flirt my way out of getting a speeding ticket. As always, I've been Lou. It's been an absolute pleasure. This has been a great season, a great start to the show, and hopefully many more to come. I'm super excited for the future of the show, and I'm thinking about the next episode already. Even though I definitely need a break, I've been doing this research for far too long. And also recording this for far too long. Like, I record it and I'm like, oh yeah, sweet, we're nearly done. And then I'm like, oh shit, now I've got to edit this all. And like, editing is not my forte. Like, yeah, I don't know if you saw on the Instagram, I put like my editing technique, which is probably shit. Basically, I took music production at college, so I kind of know how to edit, but yeah, I don't enjoy it. But as always, stay safe, stay spooky, and good night.